Welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to Investing with Steve Davenport and Clem Miller. Every 2 weeks, Steve and Clem bring you brief investment insights you may not find anywhere else. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Here are Steve and Clem.
Welcome to Skeptic's Guide to Investing. I'm Steve Davenport. Today, we're talking about Tesla. And of course, Tesla is talking about Musk. Tesla is one of the so-called Magnificent Seven, and it also is a common vehicle, pun intended, to express the theme of climate transition. The company is profitable, and revenues and earnings have been growing. Yet, Clem, you don't hold Tesla in your investment portfolio. Why is that?
Well, Steve, there are several reasons. And, in this podcast, we're going to be talking about all of those reasons. But I'll start with my number one reason, which is that Tesla is no longer the only game in town. Tesla faces competition from other companies that are doing EV cars, electric vehicle cars, other U.S. companies that are doing it, other European companies are doing it. And they're gaining ground on Tesla. And some of these companies actually have better customer service. They have a broader ground game in terms of being able to sell these cars. And so they have a broader opportunity ahead for being able to advance in the EV space than say Tesla does. Tesla's carved out a niche for folks who are, relatively well off. And you see a lot of these in areas like, for example, the San Francisco area, which is quite wealthy. But I think in the rest of the U.S. And in other parts of the world, it could be that other companies besides Tesla, sort of the standard automobile companies, would be able to increase their market share relative to Tesla's market share.
When I think of Tesla, I only think about Musk. And I hear people who invest just because they want to take advantage of his genius or his leadership. I think about, the Edisons. I think about the Bezos. I think about the Gates. There are certain people who come along and people don't necessarily look at the earnings or the assets, and they just look at the aura of the leader, and it makes sense for them to just invest based on the fact that he's involved. Is that completely wrong?
No, I think a lot of folks do invest in Tesla on that basis. I think,
Saying to put all your money there. I'm just saying that and when you're looking at things, I find that a lot of people, associate with his rebel ass attitude or associate with his ideas. And I'm not sure they're necessarily EV people or environmental transition people. They're drawn to a personality. And is personality investing something you do in your portfolio?
Oh, absolutely not. I think that to invest solely on somebody's personality or liking that personality could be an issue. I mean, let's look. There have been some articles last few days about how Elon Musk is complaining that he's no longer in control of Tesla. He owns about 13%. Of Tesla. So he needs other shareholders to agree with whatever he wants to do with respect to Tesla. And what does he want to do? Basically, he wants to do two things with Tesla. One is to continue to have Tesla be a cash cow to support some of its other operations, such as SpaceX and some of his newer, more interesting ideas. And also he wants Tesla to be essentially an AI/robotics company. He keeps chafing at the notion that Tesla is an automobile company, because he doesn't want Tesla to be viewed in the same light as some of the other
cars. Ford.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't like the Ford and GM multiples.
No, he doesn't. he doesn't want to be compared to them.
If the overall EV market is growing fast enough, does it really matter if there's that much competition? Isn't there enough for everybody to get around? Isn't there enough profits for everyone?
Well, you know, I would say that the problem here is that a lot of the EV growth in the world is related to tax subsidies. It's really gotten off the ground with regard to tax subsidies. And those tax subsidies have existed in all the major jurisdictions in the United States at the various state levels, federal. You've got tax subsidies in Europe. You got tax subsidies in China. And quite frankly, a lot of these are expiring over the next year, 2-3 years. And will they be extended? Maybe, maybe not. But we could potentially see quite a bit of demand destruction for electric vehicles once these tax subsidies ease off.
My understanding is that China is a potentially immense market for EVs. How much do you think this helps Tesla?
Well, it was, but now you've got considerable domestic Chinese competition for Tesla and cheaper as well, considerably cheaper. You've got, for example, BYD, which is really challenging Tesla in China and could potentially challenge Tesla and the others on a worldwide basis as well. And it's not just BYD. You have other companies in China that are also challenging Chinese or Tesla's dominance within China. And to the extent that that some of these domestic Chinese companies are competing with Tesla, they're trying to encourage the Chinese government to take certain subtle protectionist measures that might favor them and disfavor Tesla.
I'm shocked. You mean a country could be supporting its businesses over the open competition of other countries?
Yes, shocked, shocked.
I think that I understand that Tesla relies heavily on China for supplies of specialty metals and lithium and other critical minerals. Do you think such reliance is a vulnerability that should concern investors?
Absolutely. You know, in the whole international economics, geopolitics world, the supply of critical minerals, the available of critical mineral supply chains is a very critical, literally critical element in determining which companies and industries are likely to survive, and in which nations as well. And so Tesla has made a very strong effort to try to secure material flows from China and from other countries of the products that are needed for its battery, such as lithium and graphite and other minerals, for nickel for its batteries. And you know, if all of a sudden those minerals were not to be available or were to be in short supply, they simply would not be able to make enough cars, and perhaps its competition might have at some point better access to those minerals. And that could, again, be the Chinese companies. They might obtain favorable access to the minerals that, you know, that come out of China. And a little known fact, Steve, little known fact about...
I like those.
Yeah, little known fact. People wonder, well, why is it that China actually has so many of these critical minerals and not, you know, other places in the world, like the rare earth metals and lithium and so on. And the reason for that is because China has not really put any effort into, or has put less effort into, environmental protection than other countries in the world. Some of these things like lithium and rare earth metals, you know, there's a lot of this all around the world. It's just a lot of it is in areas that don't like the environmental damage associated with the mining and production of these minerals. So China, you know, China hasn't cared. They've weighed in on the side of obtaining the minerals. And so that's why they have the production and have an ability to influence markets through the availability of those minerals.
Absolutely. What's your take on Tesla's valuation? Does that figure into your decision not to invest in it?
Well, next to the issue of Elon Musk himself, I would say that that's the second biggest issue. Tesla is just so expensive. Even when you look at it on a PEG basis, forward PEG basis, and PEG being the forward price to earnings ratio divided by long-term earnings growth, it's over 4. And, you know, I like to see companies that have PEG ratios of between 1 and 2. And you know, nearly all of my portfolio is between 1 and 2. I've got a few that are less than 1. I got a couple that are more than 2. I don't have anything that's near 4, and Tesla is above 4. So it's just way too overvalued. And this, Steve, may go to the point that you made, that you've got so many people out there, so many investors or speculators out there who just like what Elon is doing and have a lot of faith in him as a you know, inventor, and as a, you know, they like his kind of persona that he's developed, and they invest on the basis of liking his personality and are willing to pay a lot more. But, you know, Steve, you also made the counterpoint, excellent counterpoint, which is that, you know, he doesn't want Tesla, that is Musk, doesn't want Tesla to look like or to be considered to be similar to the other automobile companies that are racing to catch up with him, because those companies have much lower valuations. They have much, much lower multiples, much lower, much lower multiples, and are going to have more attractive PEG ratios. So he doesn't want Tesla to look as expensive as it really does by characterizing Tesla as an AI/robotics company and not a car company. He can create that imagery of, yeah, we should be priced just like some of these newer AI companies.
Sure. I think it's his job, really, to try to convince investors that they're worth more. I think that's part of the aura of a CEO. And I'm not sure it's always a good thing, because I think sometimes they may stretch the truth about their company and about its prospects in order to get investors interested. And so I'm a big believer in the PEG ratio. Like you said, it's the PE divided by the earnings growth. And I look at companies and say, wow, that's a 30% earnings growth, but the PE is 120. I don't want to get involved in that kind of earnings growth if I have to pay that much for it. I would much rather see something that has 15% earnings growth and, you know, somewhere around a 20 multiple. That to me is more valuable. So I agree with the whole concept of PEG. I think it's really one of the episodes we should probably do in the future.
Yeah, and I would just say on PEG that, you know, to a degree, you have to discount the denominator, that is earnings growth, because that earnings growth, forward earnings growth, is a function of what analysts are thinking about future earnings growth. And sometimes they can be a bit on the optimistic side. And so you have to...
Correct. I mean, yeah. Everybody wants people to understand why they have a buy. And sometimes I think they stretch that earnings growth number beyond reality. And I agree with you that, you know, Tesla is a questionable company in terms of valuation.
Yeah, so I mean, just to take that point even further, if you compare Tesla and Nvidia on PEG, Tesla looks a lot more expensive relative to its prospective earnings growth than NVIDIA does. And NVIDIA is considered to be quite expensive. So, you know, Tesla's sort of beyond the bounds. NVIDIA might be borderline extreme, but Tesla is you know, outside the outer bounds of being extreme.
Yeah, we got a question from the mailbag. It says, do either of you currently own Tesla? And I think this can be a very short answer. The answer is no.
The answer is no for all of the above.
The only thing I would say is that he is doing some interesting things. And like one company that I'm interested in is Albemarle. Albemarle produces a special metals that are used in the batteries. And so to me, if you want to play the EV space, that's how I would think about it, because they supply Ford, they supply GM, they supply Tesla with some of the basic components of the batteries. And so to me, if EV wins, Albemarle wins. And I think that I would much rather do that than something that's as specific as the CEO is the reason why I'm buying it. And then he goes, you know, smoking pot during a podcast. I don't like to depend on people that I'm not sure about. So I would much rather feel good about a business than buying the business versus buying a personality. Do you have anything else to add on?
No, I would just say that, you know, again, with regard to Musk, you know, look what he did to Twitter, you know, now X. He really ran that thing into the ground, changed it a lot, made it much more political. I just think, you know, he could potentially do the same kind of damage that he did to Twitter, to other companies that where he has some influence. So I would be quite concerned as a potential investor in any of Musk's companies. I mean, to me, the one that might be the most interesting down the road is SpaceX. But even there, I would be concerned about.
I think he could have an advantage in incorporating, you know, self-driving technology. I think that that's the area that I think that could make his lower end cars, you know, good candidates for taxis, because they've been working on this for a while. I know a lot of people have been working on, you know, self-driving technology. But I'm just saying there's a possibility that they become the de facto first to market, and that there is some advantage to that. And yeah. So I think when we look at this, I think you have to do the hard work and look at the numbers to try to determine whether the company is what you want to be investing in.
Yeah, on self-driving, you know, he faces some competition too.
Sure.
Namely from Google, Alphabet on their Waymo product. And, you know, Google, that is Alphabet, has a whole, whole laboratory, so to speak, that works on things like that. Some of us of a certain age will remember Bell, or at least have heard of it. Bell Labs was the think tank.
Yep.
Yeah, think tank internal to AT&T. That is the old AT&T. And they would come up with all sorts of inventions, and you know, they had sort of an unlimited budget. They were like an internal NASA or DARPA to the AT&T group. And that's essentially what Alphabet is doing. They're cross-subsidizing their other projects. And of course, the Waymo project is one of those.
No. Is there anything else you want to say about Tesla or this concept? Is there a stock that you think of that besides Albemarle that you would think, you know, could be a beneficiary of AI? I mean, of EVs?
Yeah, well, I think... Not really. You know, when I think of the minerals producers, lithium and so on. Yeah. I mean, there are some out there, but you know, my in my investment process, and you know, what sort of the more on the judgmental side as opposed to the quantitative side, I just think of commodity oriented companies as being a bit too volatile for my taste. They have ups and downs on share prices. That being said, I'm not totally against them. I own a uranium company, and uranium has been doing extremely well in recent years. So I'm okay with that. But uranium deposits are very limited, narrow. Lithium, they're trying to develop in many parts of the world now, knowing that there is this increased demand. So I just don't know where lithium is going to go. So you and I might have a difference with respect to lithium miners.
But no, I just think that, you know, sometimes you got to go back to the basics and think about what's going to affect everybody. I mean, I've owned glassware Corning for a while because I thought that the work with the, you know, foams, glass, and then I think with some of the work with these, you know, when you're looking at new homes and they talk about the ratings of the windows and how, yeah, you know, they take in the sun when you need it and they don't take, you know, I think eventually the solar technology and that whole space has a lot of ideas that could lead to something interesting. So yeah.
You're talking about a more generic investment topic, which I think you and I both agree on, which is that you don't necessarily have to invest in the well-known companies that make the products that we're all aware of. You can invest in the suppliers to those companies and the contractors to those companies.
And I appreciate your work today. I think you did a great job of summarizing Tesla, Clem, and I think that our listeners really appreciate the insights. So everybody out there for Skeptic's Guide to Investing, thanks for listening. And I hope you enjoy this, and I hope you send us some comments and ideas. And just keep being skeptical out there. Nonsense for none, straightforward, straight talk for all. Thanks. Have a good day.
The views shared on this podcast represent the personal investment views of the hosts. They are for educational purposes and not meant to be taken as investment advice. Listeners should consult their own investment, legal, and tax advisors. Past performance of any investments is not a guarantee for future return.